Welcome to another episode of Hawk Talk. I'm Joel Janikowski, your host, and today we're diving deep into the world of accountability and responsibility. The first segment of our podcast will begin with Morgan Ehlers, our esteemed music teacher entering her third year. Morgan not only teaches music, she inspires accountability and responsibility in her students, fostering growth beyond the notes. Joining us in our second segment is Jen Fordahl, our dedicated 7 through 12 math teacher. Jen is more than just an educator, she's a trailblazer in instilling accountability and responsibility in her students, making math not just a subject, but a life skill. So stay tuned for an enlightening conversation on accountability and responsibility with Morgan Ehlers and Jen Fordahl. Now, don't forget, you can listen to Hawk Talk wherever you get your podcast, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or YouTube. You can just search for Hawk Talk HPS and you'll be able to find us and listen to us wherever you listen to your podcast. Now, let's begin the episode. Hey, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in to another episode of Hawk Talk. I'm sitting here today with Morgan Ehlers, our music choir and band teacher of K through 12, now going into her third year. Thank you very much, Morgan, for coming in here and talking with us today.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
No problem.
Awesome. So we've been kind of inching towards having this talk for a little while now. We've been trying to figure out, like, well, how can we present this? You know, how can we get into this? And I'm really glad that now today we can actually get into it a little bit. But before we start, you know, we're in the middle of semester one, our first semester, and we're kind of in the thick of it now, where the Christmas concert is within sight, I would say. What are you working on with the kids right now? What's going on right now for just general school year right now?
So there's like multiple things I'm working on. So like depending on like level, so like fifth grade band is very much still in the basics area. Like I'm not even worried about the Christmas concert with them. I just want to make sure we get our fundamentals in, because I'm not going to stress the kids out that they're going to have to perform in front of people when we're still learning what we're supposed
like,
to be doing.
Why have them worry about that moving target when they have a target closer to them that they need to hit first?
Yep.
Absolutely. And I suppose when you build those fundamentals, when you get to the big moment, the fundamentals take care of it.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't have your fundamentals, then that concert's kind of pointless at that point. So, and then like with my sixth graders, they're moving, they've got, I'd say about 50% fundamentals in, 50 to 75%, you know, it's always a rolling hill rather than just a steady incline. 'Cause one day they'll have it and the next day it's gone. And that's just how music is. So, they're actually, I'm challenging them now with actual concert pieces. So not out of their fundamentals book. Mm-hmm. So they are learning actual sheet music that's a page long and stuff. And then, junior high, definitely challenge them with harder pieces, and they know it, and I tell them that all the time. I'm like, I want you to get more advanced, so when you get to high school, it's not so shocking that these pieces are harder. So I like build them up with grade level, so like each piece has a grade level out of five, six.
Okay.
So with them, they're in like grade one, one and a half, two, which that too is pretty challenging. Like that's some of the more complex that my high schoolers deal with.
Absolutely. And these are different grade levels than your regular learning levels. This is a different infrastructure.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So like saying grade one, some people might think, oh, that's super easy. But in reality, it's, you know, that's not basics anymore. That's way more challenging. And then like with my high schoolers, I really challenge them. I gave them stuff that's not so steady. So it's like swing music.
It's not so black and white. It's a little bit more feel.
Yes, definitely. And it's, you could tell they're, you know, they're working with it. Like it's a challenge. And I knew that was something that we've been working on for a while. But now like all of these pieces have that offbeat problem. So now they have to do it in every single piece, which I personally enjoy because it's kind of funny seeing that little, oh, what's going on? Like, why is this wrong? And it's because it's not straightforward anymore. It's okay. Now you actually got to think about where you're playing. So
absolutely. That's awesome. So, I mean, there's lots of little pieces that we're working on to kind of get there, but also just build their general fundamentals as well. That's awesome. So kind of the, like I was saying before, you know, we were talking about trying to get to this conversation. It's a lot about it's a lot about accountability and responsibility. And that's one of the things that you're building from what you've been talking about the last, you know, couple of weeks, what you've been working on with the kids. What were some of the struggles as a teacher that you experienced, and what we're doing to work on that? What have some of the bumps that you've run into, and how have we smoothed those out, or how, what are the tricks that you've learned to kind of smooth those out across even just these last 9 weeks?
So accountability with being a musician is going home and practice, because what you need to do is not rely on the time you have in class, because the time in class is not enough. Mm-hmm. Because I could sit there and tell them that they're doing this stuff wrong, that this is not accurate, like this is what we need to do instead. But mm-hmm. if they don't go home and practice it, it's just a bad habit continuing mm-hmm. to repeat itself. So that accountability is just trusting them to go home and actually work on some stuff. Mm-hmm. And like with being a music teacher, you will talk to multiple teachers. They require practice minutes. They don't require practice minutes. And I'm one that doesn't require it, but mm-hmm. it's definitely something that's needed. So absolutely. I do reward bins instead, or reward a day. So my junior high loves pep band music. I love it. I love pep band music as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes they want to do guess the pep band song, where we listen to different pep band songs and they have to guess the melody and everything. Mm-hmm. And they like it so much that I use it as the reward. So I actually did something this past week. I was like, if you go home and you practice for 30 minutes, you bring me back a note signed full name by your parent, mm-hmm. we'll do it on Friday. And most of the kids did it. And as a reward, I gave them half the class period to do that activity that they wanted to do.
So it's huge, because as you know, I've talked to you about how big of a pep band fan that I am. And having that motivator to pull them along is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. That's super, super exciting. So with, you know, giving them those rewards, was that something that you kind of started initially when you were, when you started teaching, or was this kind of like a gradual thing that you started introducing, or what did that look like?
I think the reward bins definitely started last year. So like my second year. And I think it's mainly as a musician myself, it's so easy to fake those practice minutes, you know? And like, it's easy to go home, get a piece of paper signed. But then with the way I have practice minutes set up with this new book that we're using, they actually have to record me a snippet of what they're practicing, so like I can tell if they practiced it or not, because if they play it for me on the recording and it doesn't sound great, I'm like, I don't know if you really practiced it that much.
Well, the proof's in the pudding. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, at the end of the day, I mean, if they're going to see those increments, those improvements, it's going to be obvious mm-hmm. either way, whether they practice or not.
Yeah, so. And like with those fifth grade bands, you're able to tell how quickly they're progressing based off of practice.
Oh yeah.
So when I have kids come up to me and they're like, yep, I practiced. And like, it's a majority of the group, then a majority should sound pretty good in that exercise. So you're able to really tell off of just listening.
So really, to kind of encompass all of that, it's basically creating kind of a sense of a reward plan or goal, essentially, to help pull them through kind of as a motivator for that self-accountability and that responsibility.
Yeah, because when you think about it, when you're working a job, you know you're doing a good job when you get a raise.
Yep.
You know, and these little reward systems, like, because it's not every day they get a reward, it's at the end of the week.
Okay, it's put off. It's not instant gratification.
Correct.
Which is awesome. Yeah.
Yep. And it's just like, you know, doing your work. This is your reward for putting in that hard work.
That's awesome. So kind of moving into our next question. So in what ways do you encourage students to take ownership of their musical learning and growth? So kind of how do you have them kind of take ownership of, you know, that responsibility and that accountability, where it's kind of in their lap? How do you get that over there?
This question could be kind of mean, but I constantly ask them, how do you want to sound?
Dang.
Okay, because I could tell them what they're doing wrong. And like, at the end of the day, I know people think that it's the conductor that does everything, but really it's the kids. I mean, if they want to sound good, that's on them. I could tell them what to do, mm-hmm. and I can tell them how to fix their problems. But at the end of the day, it's them who's sounding the way they're sounding.
Wow.
So, and then as like a group, it's like, okay, your classmates are putting in this time. How do you want the group to sound? Because now it's on you. If mm-hmm. you're not putting in that work, the group sounds like the average of the work. So if you have kids that are not doing the work and you got kids doing immense work, mm-hmm. it's going to sound like the average of that amount, because it doesn't matter if this kid did 100% the work, because it depends on this other kid as well.
Gotcha. So it's not only that self-accountability of like, all right, well, I'm going to, in a sense, audit myself. Like, how do I feel that I'm doing? And then also to my peers.
Yeah.
So it's essentially at their grade level, essentially. Mm-hmm. Instead of it coming from a teacher saying, oh, you need to do this, this, and this, or you're doing this, this, this wrong. It's reverse, essentially. So, wow.
Yeah. And I don't know. Kids, like, I'll ask them, I was like, who are the parents really thinking about when there's a concert? Because I could tell you, they're not looking at the person waving their hands at the kids. You know, they're looking at the kids putting in that work. So as much as I'm putting in work, they also need to be receptive and put in almost the same exact work that I'm putting in.
Yeah, I believe that. And not only that, they need to do it outside of that classroom, kind of bringing back to our previous question. So with that, you know, we were talking about how, you know, it has to do with their peers as well. Like that overall, it's not just the individuals, it's all of them having to work together to create those increases in ability. Music's all about working together, but how does everyone being responsible help make them better? Not only with music, just that general teamwork. Do you feel like that's one of those things where it provides an opportunity for them to practice that skill of teamwork, would you say?
Yeah, it definitely opens up the form of communication, because you can't do well working if you can't communicate with the person you're working with. So if, for example, there's like Junior High Festival, which some of my kids did, and that's in Bowman. And if they wanted to do it with someone, well, they had to communicate. They had to figure out times to practice with one another. And some of them came into my room after school to work with their partner. Yeah. And that holds them into that teamwork aspect of communication, because I don't think you can have teamwork without that communication piece.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And how are you going to identify any problems across, if there's something going wrong, or if one kid's hearing a problem and the other one isn't, if they're not willing to communicate, scared to communicate, or just aren't used to doing that skill, how are they going to get better at it moving into the future as an adult, whether it be work
exactly
or anything like that?
Yep.
So that's awesome. So that's just great practice, really. Mm-hmm. Again and again and again. So, we got one more question here. Let's see here. So actually, that was our last question. So we're going to go into a quick break. And in our next segment here, we're going to go into how being accountable, as well as still making things fun, how that can be done in the classroom. And welcome back from the break. Really quick, we are actually going to jump back into a conversation that we were having during the break. I thought it'd be a really good thing to kind of continue from our previous conversation. So, Morgan, I'm going to have you kind of bring back what you just told me while we were on break.
So, on break, we were kind of talking about like accountability. And to me, it's also like work ethic of being accomplished or feeling accomplished at the end of the day with the work you're putting in. Mm-hmm. It's something that my dad had talked to me about, and he's like, if you're going to do a job, you do it 100%, even if you don't like the job. Because at the end of the day, they're going to remember the work you put in, not if you liked it or not. So at the end of the day, like, I feel confident with what I'm teaching. I feel confident that I'm teaching it the right way and that kids are hopefully understanding. And I want my students to feel that confidence as well of going home or leaving the classroom feeling like, yeah, I put in the work today. Mm-hmm. And that's the ultimate goal I have of is kids going in and feeling confident that I did my best. And even if it wasn't all right, it was still the best I could do for
today. And I suppose that translates to concerts too, which is kind of quote unquote, like the big monster. Would you agree?
Oh yes, 100%.
So I'm assuming that also translates to on that concert day, where regardless of what happens in that one take you get to make for presenting your piece, regardless of whatever happens, they can still go home feeling confident. Well, I've been putting in the work and I know what I'm capable of, regardless if every note was perfect or not, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you could do it 100 times perfectly in practice, and then it comes down to that one moment and eyes are on you and you mess it up. And mm-hmm. all you have to do is think back, I put in a lot of work for this, and I'm happy that I was this confident when I made that wrong note.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about that. Like, that happened to you.
So in college, I have this thing called the senior recital where it's just me and my pianist. And there is this one marimba song I loved and I practiced it. I mean, I was practicing music 10 hours a week average. And there's this ending chord and it's a beautiful chord. And like, it's just powerful and you're supposed to hit it hard. And I practiced it. I practiced it perfectly like 10 times in a row to make sure it was great for this concert. And concert day shows up and I'm going through my song. I'm feeling confident and I go for the chord and I hit it wrong. And it's just this blah sound. And I'm just sitting there like pause. Cause you know, you pause for dramatic effect. And then I released my hands. I went off stage and I was like, that was wrong. And my my professor actually was like, okay, we'd like you to perform this song now with the band. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it.
And
like,
so second chance.
Right? Second chance. I was like, I got this. Like, I knew what I did wrong. And, you know, I practiced again, you know, multiple times a week. And concert day comes up with the band. And I'm like, okay, I got it this time. I got it. I'm looking at my hands. I know where they need to be. And I go down for the swing down and I hit it. And it's wrong again. And I'm just sitting there, again, for dramatic effect, put my arms down, go off stage. And I was like, that was wrong again. But I knew I had practiced it
the best
I could. You still
had confidence walking off the...
Oh, yeah. I mean, that chord was so loud that, I mean, as long as I didn't show that it was wrong, I don't think people knew it was wrong.
Which, again, goes with that confidence. And how do you build confidence? Practicing responsibility and that accountability of practicing. So you're building your base of confidence by practicing every day. So it affected the concert at the end.
Oh yeah. And like the biggest thing I tell kids too is, you know it's wrong. The audience doesn't know it's wrong.
No.
They don't have the music that I'm looking at. They don't have the music you're looking at. They haven't practiced with you all semester. So if you get it wrong, I was like, leave it and it's done. You know? And or if you get lost in a piece of music, leave it and keep going. Like, you can't stop and look back at what's already gone by. You got to start looking forward and see if you can do it better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome. I really enjoyed that story. I kind of wanted to bring that back just because it was so, it applied so much to what we were talking about and it's just fun. So kind of moving away from, you know, maybe the hard grit of, you know, responsibility, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about balance. So as a music teacher, how do you balance being accountable while still keeping music fun and creative? So, because obviously with responsibility and accountability, it's very stern and rigid, you know, but with, you know, creativity and fun, it's kind of the polar opposite. How do you balance that?
And that's a really good question. And this is one that I had to think about. I go off of where this class is currently sitting when I start to bring fun, or not bring fun, but provide fun activities in the room. Because if they're not putting in the work, I don't want to reward them with a fun activity, you know? Yeah. So, like, for example, my high schoolers, I mean, I just have to rant about these kids. They come in and they sit down and they start practicing their music right away. Like, I don't have to say anything. They're looking through their music.
No prompts or nothing.
Nothing. They go in and they sit down and they play. Too much sometimes, because I'll be ready to start the piece and they'll still be fiddling around.
Still
and
going. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a good problem to have. I'd rather have that problem than no problem. Absolutely. So they put in that time as soon as they come in the room. So I was like, yeah, they did really good. We could do a reward day. Mm-hmm. So, like, one of the activities that I brought back, which was still musical, was it was giving their instrument a new home, kind of, like a rehoming instrument.
Okay.
So they picked a friend and they showed their friend how to play their instrument, and they had to pick an instrument they've not played before. Oh, and so they showed them how to do it. We cleaned the instrument, so it was sanitary.
Yeah.
So like, I had a clarinet player playing the drums. I had a clarinet player playing the trumpet. And it allowed them to expand a little bit more in different instruments, but it also showed them how much they knew in their own instrument, because they struggled so much trying to play someone else's that it gave them that appreciation of, I know how to work my instrument, and that's
absolutely
perfect.
Absolutely. So I mean, with that, I could imagine a lot of laughing.
It was great. As a music teacher, it was so funny to watch these advanced musicians struggle on a different instrument. And I mean, it was, no one played that in their new instrument perfectly. And it sounded like I was teaching my fifth graders, like at the beginning of band.
Wow.
Like, it was that beginner
that
style. Yeah. Like, if you're playing something you don't know, it's back to the basics. And it was just really funny for me to watch these kids who have been playing their instrument for years go back to that beginner style. It was great.
So it was kind of a way to represent and kind of appreciate the hard work that they put in over time.
Yeah.
And then also it was probably a bit of like a humble check, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
And a little bit of an ego check. It's like, well, you know, like you're really good at this one thing, but you may not be good at all. So like, mm-hmm. you know, that's awesome. So really just mixing things up kind of allows that creativity, that fun, that uniqueness.
Yeah. And I mean, it gave them the appreciation that they have for their instrument now. Because I know I've had some kids saying they want to change it up, that they would rather play this instrument, they would rather play that instrument. Yeah. And when I made them do this, they're like, wow, I'm actually pretty good at my instrument. So why am I complaining about it?
Absolutely.
So, and that was great for me to have them realize that their instruments are great and that they are good.
That's awesome. Yeah, big confidence builder on that one. So then moving into our next couple of questions here. How do you handle situations where students may struggle with accountability, whether it be in music practice or performance or just general day-to-day classwork? I mean, how do you deal with that struggle when they struggle with accountability?
I feel like the biggest thing is I be real with them. And I think it's so important that I don't lie to them when it's not going well. If we're practicing a piece, and you know, this is something my professors tell me, is that they will never tell their students that they're doing great when it's not great. So I, as harsh as it may be, I tell them when things are going wrong, and I tell them that maybe we're not spending enough time on this, or maybe you need to spend a little more time at home on this. And I'll give them sections. Like if we're struggling with a section, I'll have them start it and be like, you know, this is where we need to begin looking if we want to start fixing this song. Like, you need to look in this area. And like, we'll do a run through and they'll, you know, sometimes they'll ask me, how was it? And I'll just be like, well, it was not that good. And they're like, you mean it wasn't great? I was like, no, it was not that good. And
yeah,
I mean, that's the biggest thing. I mean, if you want to improve as a musician, you need to be told that things aren't going great and that you need to put a little extra work
Absolutely.
On it.
And that's the position that you're in. They're kind of relying on you to make sure that they're building their skills in the right direction and that they are actually building skills.
Yeah. And then like with musicians, it's so easy to create a bad habit. You know, they can play a note wrong and think that's the right way to play the note. And then we revisit that note later and they've been practicing it wrong for forever. Mm-hmm. Or same thing with like holding instruments. You know, yeah. I've encountered a few of those where some people are holding their instruments a little funky and it's just like, well, this is not how we hold it. Can we start practicing a better way to hold this instrument? Mm-hmm. And it's because they've just built up bad habits and you have to point that out of, nope, this is wrong. We need to fix this now. Mm-hmm. And like, I'll have some kids like start practicing a song and they'll practice it the wrong way. And I'll be like, no, let's not practice it that way. And they're like, well, I'm just kind of goofing off with it. I was like, I understand, but we're creating a bad habit when we Absolutely. Practice it like that.
It's like, what are you doing long term?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Wow. It's all muscle memory. Being a musician's muscle memory. You got your finger muscles moving. You got your mouth muscles moving. And if you practice it the wrong way, you create a lifelong problem. Mm-hmm. Especially with brass players. I mean, if you don't talk to them about the way they're playing instrument, it's so easy to puff out your cheeks like that. Oh, yeah. And then you're creating wrong airflow. I mean, mm-hmm. all the air goes into the cheeks rather than into your instrument. And now you've mm-hmm. created a problem.
Absolutely. Because where air is kind of a important thing when it comes to brass. Well, most instruments.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. Wow. Okay. So then, aside of struggle, so beyond the classroom, how can accountability skills in music benefit students in other areas in their lives?
So I think the biggest thing I've noticed with music is it's given me a better understanding of my own motor skills. Like, the way my body can move. I understand how it can move now through music. And I feel like I'm able to pick up things a little bit quicker when it involves like mm-hmm. being quick on my feet.
I never would have thought of like mobility and like motor skills. Mm-hmm. So you're talking gross motor skills and fine motor skills as well.
Yes. Yeah. And like, as a drummer, I mean, I can move this hand differently than this hand, and this foot can do its own thing as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a better awareness of what my body is doing because I can control different parts in different ways at different times.
Wow. So you're almost creating less klutzy kids in a way.
I hope so. In a way.
Oh, what the heck? I would have never expected that
music has so much to do with the body. Like, yep. It's almost like it's like cousin ties between this and PE in a sense. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting.
And like that kind of goes to that, like that quick twitch in the brain, you know, because when you're reading music, and I tell the kids all the time, I was like, you have like 5,000 things to think about when we read music. Yep. You have to think about what you're reading. You have to read ahead. You have to think about how you're breathing into your instrument. You have to think of how to produce that sound in your instrument while looking at me to keep a beat and keep that rhythm.
So much multitasking.
Oh, right, so much multitasking. Like, it's amazing that these kids can do it, because it is so much to do. Mm. And I mean, you have to look up at me, you gotta look at your music, you gotta sit tall the entire time, you have to be aware of how much air you're using when producing these notes. It's an insane amount that they have to think about.
Well, don't they say if a kid learns an instrument, it raises their IQ like 10 points or something like that? I feel like I've heard that something.
I've heard it, but like I guess I've never dug into the facts of it.
What are the statistics and all?
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard it a lot.
I think it honestly creates a more functional kid for multitasking. Mm. So, I mean, if you look at a kid chewing gum when they're a musician, I've had this pointed out to me, is I'll chew gum off beat. Like, I'll just chew gum unconsciously. Yeah. So my body is doing something while I'm focusing on another thing. Mm-hmm. So it creates that almost like autopilot effect,
yes,
where you can continue to do this one thing and not think about it while doing another activity that you have to think about.
Gotcha. So it creates better autonomy, basically, with the body and the mind.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. Well, that pretty much concludes our episode for this portion of this episode. And in this next session, we're going to be talking with Jen Fordahl, our math teacher, a little bit more about accountability as well as responsibility. And welcome back. Thanks for tuning into the second section of Hawk Talk. I have here sitting with me today, Jen Fordahl, our math teacher here on the 7 through 12 side.
Yes, sir.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you very much, Jen, for coming in and talking with us about accountability and responsibility and all that stuff. So
you're welcome. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, when I was talking about this with Morgan, you know, I was thinking, you know who else we should have on this podcast? We should have Jen Fordahl on this podcast, because I can't think of anybody or any other subject specifically that deals with responsibility and accountability. So thank you very much for coming in and being a part of that. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the main things that we're dealing with right now, we're roughly, I want to say, in between that second 9 weeks. So we're definitely edging out that first semester, and we're in the thick of it now.
Right.
You know, the kids realize that there is no escape. You know, they are.
They're stuck.
for better word or not, you know, they're stuck. So it's like, this is what the rest of this year is going to be like, regardless whether they enjoy it or not. So they have to start that grind. They have to start that resiliency, that accountability, and the responsibility part. So one of the questions that I had that was related with that had to do with, why do you think being accountable is a big deal for students, especially now that it's starting to hit them hard? And how does it affect their learning in school and maybe in life?
Well, I mean, as you know, Joel, accountability is important to me in general. I'm just, whether it's in life with my personal relationships, in school, in sports, whatever I've done.
Yeah.
Because I think, and I say this to my kids often, I think that you get more satisfaction when you're responsible. I mean, when you feel like you had a say in it, you know, when you created that. And I think that's a mindset that's really hard to make kids have. I mean, it really is. Because it's much easier to say, you know, I didn't get enough sleep last night, or I had a game, or whatever happened, that's why I didn't do well, instead of, I just didn't take the extra 20 minutes to study.
But when they do that, like you were talking about, is that, wouldn't you say that that's more sustainable long-term, not only just for the responsibility side, but just the general kickback? Like, you feel so great when you do the thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, and they'll tell you. I mean, they'll look at you and they'll be like, I studied and I did so good. And I'm like, then you deserve it. Good job.
That's huge.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I try to tell them that. And I said, you know, just in life, we want people to show up. We want people to put in the work. We want to know that they hold as much value as we do. And with math, as you stated, not everybody is on board, you know, it's
me.
We know, Joel, we've had the conversation.
Yeah.
But I mean, and I think that's the hardest. And so one of the first things that I always tell my kids is I'm not here to make you love math. I just want you to understand its importance. And that if you actually try and put forth a little bit of effort, maybe you'll just like it a little more and have little more confidence and trust yourself. Because that's ultimately my only goal. We have to teach it no matter what.
Oh, yeah, because it's one of our core subjects Absolutely. That we have to teach. And would you say it's beyond even, well, I might hold that off. That might come a little bit later in our podcast here. There's a question that has to do with that. But basically, you're giving the opportunity to learn kind of the hard skills, essentially, in a sense.
Yeah, I really feel like it is. And I think the most important thing as a teacher is we can't just expect the kids to be accountable. We have to be accountable, too. And so I think if I demonstrate that every day and show kids that, hey, you know, I'm going to grade your paper every day, and I'm going to give you feedback on everything you do, and I'm going to have you evaluate your own stuff. And when they see that I hold value to that, I think that some of that, not always, we know that doesn't work, is going to rub off. And I mean, and that's the most that I can do.
Yeah, having that rigidity, that consistency and all that stuff being kind of emblematic of that. Absolutely. So then with that, the kids who don't, the ones who struggle, me, okay, can you share some cool tricks or strategies that you've used to get those junior high or high school students to be more responsible, to buy in when they're struggling?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the way you say it, and we've had conversations just about math in general because it was a struggle for you. And I think when you go almost above and beyond to try to make a connection with those people and go, I get it. You know, I understand that it's hard. I mean, and that's okay when you tell them that's okay. I don't expect you to be my A student, you know, but maybe we can figure out a way that you're going to get this a little better. When they realize that you do care, I think then they want to put in that little bit more effort for you. I mean, that's what I've noticed. And that's why when I'm grading homework or whatever it is I may be doing, that I give half credit if you finish. Because that's the first step. If I can get you to do the work.
To do the thing. Absolutely.
Then gradually stuff is going to fall into place and you're going to go to where, you know, if I give you 50% because you did it all and then I allow you to rework it and talk to me about it and then get a 75, who do you really have fingers to point at? And that's kind of one of the first things I always say to them when they come in and they're like, oh, my grade's terrible. Can I have bonus points? And I just go, have you done any rework?
Because they have that opportunity to rebuild back what they've lost.
Have you come to see me? Have you asked for help? Have you, like, you know?
Because then that kicks it back on them and it makes them self-evaluate.
And that's the biggest thing is they need to self-assess. You know, we do that every day. I have them do, you know, work. And then I say, no, you grade it. It doesn't matter to me if you got it right or wrong.
Yeah, because it only affects
them. It's got to matter to you.
Yeah, it only affects them.
So, and I think when I reinforce that, because we do that every day, and I reinforce, you know, again, what I want from them and my expectations, they understand. And I think when you clear that up right away with students and with people, when they know where you stand, there's no gray area, you know,
and
there's no push. It's just what I expect. But I also expect other people to expect that from me. So then it's okay. And I think kids know that.
That's awesome. So then moving on to our next question here. So in your experience, how does making students own up to their own work and progress affect how confident they are and driven that they become?
You know, I've noticed it, especially in some of my kids, I think that struggle the most, whether they get, you know, help from other paras or things like that. I find it very interesting that with some of them in particular, just the level of, you know, they come in and they're like, you know, I don't hate math as much. And I'm like, you know, that's a compliment for me. It's not the ones that come in and they're already, you know, the A+ student that is like, I love this stuff. And, you know, it's the kids that are going, this is my least favorite subject. If they can walk in and not be dreading the day, that's a win.
The confidence is huge.
And it just goes, you know, it carries over into everything. So.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, not to throw in math terms, but it does that weight, that dread becomes exponential.
It does.
Over time, if you stop, basically, if you kind of give up, essentially.
And let's be honest, at this age, it's kind of the easiest time that that's an option. Like, let's give up. you know, because it's kind of that time where you're being released as you can handle this yourself.
And they have the option.
And can they all? I mean, we don't know that. So it's it's giving them the tools and just the constant encouragement at the same time with the same, you're not meeting expectations. We had a deal. Are you doing your part? That's the accountability that we want from all of them.
Wow. That's awesome. Okay. So then, you know, with that, can you provide an example of a student who significantly improved in math or just in general as a student generally here due to increased accountability? And then what was that journey like for that student? Because, I mean, you've been here for four or five years?
My fourth year.
Four years now?
I don't know. I'm not so good at math.
Somewhere in the ballpark.
We're going to go with that. Yeah, somewhere in there. Time flies when you're having fun, right?
Yeah.
you know, one student that I was kind of referring to, really, really a struggle. Definitely not the subject area that is her strong suit, but I would say that's not the case as much anymore, just with the amount of effort and the notes that she's taken and the confidence and everything. You know, it's nice to have someone that goes from looking down when they walk in and going, I hate this class, to smiling at you and saying, good morning. And looking up at the board and making eye contact. I mean, that's a big thing. I'm looking around my room and I'm like, I have eyes on me. I mean, well, this is
so
great.
There's so much to that. When you see that physical stature, when they go from, you know, leaning over to like shoulders back and ready to take on responsibility, it's massive to see that change because that takes so much to get there.
And, you know, I wish I could get rid of the ones that are just, you know, staring off into space. Cause I feel like if I could just, you know, we could have their attention for that, then maybe that would click for them too. But it's again, teenage years and when that's going to be for them. I think maturity wise is different for everybody.
And you know, to throw that take, to put my own personal experience on that. So I struggled in school. That's very, very evident. And especially in math. And I was still held accountable regardless. And you know, at those times, I made those decisions that you were talking about.
Right.
And at the time, did I like the outcome? No. But now that I'm an adult, I'm so thankful for that outcome.
Right.
Because that is actually how reality works. And I had to end up going back to college and going through all those hoops. But I learned a lot along the way. And then hopefully I can give that opportunity for kids saying, hey, like, listen, don't go down that road. It doesn't work. It's not ideal for you. But
I think the struggle sometimes is part of it. I mean, the making the mistakes and the messing up and all that. I mean, that's part of it, because otherwise you're not going to learn in anything.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, it's just, when are you fed up with making those mistakes? You have to make that decision, because sometimes I find that I feel like I care more than they do. And so I tell them, you know, you've got to step up and you've got to meet me, because I've provided you with what I can. Because I mean, that's ultimately what tools, what ways can we show you this, and what can we give you, be it IXL or any of the other things that they can have. And then when they go, oh, I can watch examples on that after 3 years, you're like, yeah, you can, you know.
Yeah.
So it's. And that's you know, telling them just over and over and sticking by it and staying consistent. I think that's the biggest. You know, having ups and downs is hard. Not knowing what to expect from a teacher every day is hard. From anyone, you go from your parents to your teachers to a different teacher,
and you have
seven. You know, and then you have coaches, and then you have music, and you have, so just having some kind of consistency when kids walk in, they know exactly what they're going to get when they're in my class. Unfortunately, like it or not sometimes, but you know, I mean, that's a reality of it. It's going to be that way. And I tell them that when you have a job, when you have, you know, cause ultimately I hope that we all want our kids to be a better version of us. I mean, that's what we should want.
Oh yeah, absolutely. To not, you know, struggle with whatever we're struggling with or whatever that might be, you know. And I think going back to kind of you saying, you know, you get the same thing every time you walk in that classroom, you know, while sometimes maybe to a, you know, a teenager, that might be a drag, quote unquote, as you get older, you just really do appreciate that structure.
You do.
Like, you really do, because it carries you through those days that you just don't have it in you, or your cup's low. All of that. It really helps. But
yeah.
Awesome. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and go a little bit deeper into how math can affect individuals and move forward from there. Welcome back. All right, so we're getting back into talking about, you know, accountability and responsibility and things like that. And while we were on break, we were kind of talking about how math is actually a very emotional subject. Mm-hmm. While that feels contrary to popular belief, but getting to those results can be very challenging. Mm-hmm. It can be sometimes emotional. I do know in my experience when I was going back to college in my late 20s, early 30s, there was definitely some emotional situations. And also, especially with imaginary numbers.
Those are nice.
No, because like you don't just make up like it's either real or not real. Like I don't understand. Anywho. But so my next question is how do you find the right balance between making students take responsibility and then giving them the help that they might need to succeed? So how do you find that balance?
I would say for any teacher, that's the most challenging because you have such a range among 14, 20 mm-hmm. kids, however you may be going. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I may get some kids in junior high that were still struggling with learning our multiples still.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, with no fault of theirs or anyone's. It's just we've talked about maybe just not quite how your brain works. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the biggest challenge is to push those that mm-hmm. are eager, and then help those that are not there. And that's something as a teacher. And the reason we go to college and that we spend so much time outside of the classroom is just like, how do we reach them all? Cause that's our goal.
Yeah.
And we stress about it a lot, even though some people think we might not. It's big cause you want to do all of that, but there is only one of you. And that comes back to what we've talked about is, you know, I usually try at some point, you know, regularly to have conversations mm-hmm. with both ends of that spectrum and those in between. Yep. You know, hey, what can we do? You know, what do you want to do? What do you want out of this? You know, because ultimately, I mean, I don't want everybody to have a calculator in their back pocket. We do with our phones, but, you know, that we're yep. using it for basics.
Yep.
I mean, that's my goal. Mm. So, you know, it's really hard to do that. I can't give you one specific, you know, whether it's, hey, we're going to do multiple cards that I know that they do in the younger grades you know, let's work on this. And I'm going to reteach this a different way. I'm going to give an example, a different way to see mm-hmm. if that works better for you. Because we talked about how, you know, math, there's only one solution, but there are different ways to get there. We have an expectation and we teach a certain way, mm-hmm. but I always encourage my students, how did you get there?
So if they find a different route,
share it with us. Mm-hmm. Like I'll have them show me on the board. What did you do? Explain it to me. And then I'll go, well, that's interesting. Just recently, actually, I had a kid show me something they would do in an upper level class. And I thought, well, I've never noticed that before. And then it got mm-hmm. me and Miss Burkhalter, the other math teacher, discussing that and her going, well, yeah, I normally teach this way. And me going, oh, I teach it this way. Well, we'll teach it both ways now. So, I mean, that's the luxury and the nice thing about having someone else in your department and there being other ways and people with a little bit of creativity or being taught differently, mm-hmm. you know, and then we're learning too. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's really hard to give a finite way because I think that every day we're figuring out something new,
a different way to do that thing. So really it kind of comes down to just having like an open mind essentially for a possibility. Also outsourcing with other students, having classroom collaboration.
Absolutely.
And then I'm assuming also too, you know, if there's pairs available and things like that, using those resources as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's just part of it. I mean, validating whatever they may say, like your way of mm-hmm. getting there, but you know, maybe you should try this. This would be quicker. And then they're like, mm-hmm. oh, okay. Cause they took the back route, you know? Yes. And I think it's just having that open communication. So hopefully you can get them over where they need to be a little quicker maybe.
Okay.
So, but again, it's just, it's willingness and it's getting them to be accountable and going, I don't get this. I need
yep.
help.
Yep.
Raising their hand, coming to see you, searching out. And that's the biggest, I think, mm-hmm. hurdle.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. So then moving into my next question, which was kind of more my favorite part of this podcast. So as you know, mm-hmm. I'm not the best with math. We've kind of alluded to that a little bit in this podcast. But I tend to lean more towards, you know, engaging in novelty-based approaches for the classes that I teach. Mm-hmm. So quite literally the polar opposite of math. But let's face it. So being able or having students or having to, how do I say this? Having to teach students a subject that they may not be excited about because mm-hmm. it's not novel, similar to, you know, what I have, you know, How do you handle that responsibility of having to kind of drag them through the dirt some days? Because for me, I always view it as, well, I lucked out. I have the ooh, shiny toy situation where it's like, ooh, cameras and technology and this and that. When it's math, you have none of that. You have nothing but a lot of grind. How do you lead them through that? How do you get them to walk across the coals a little bit?
I think part of the fact that I really love what I teach, and I think that's part of it, you know, because everybody's always like, how can you like math this much? Well, I mean, how do we like anything? So I think that's part of it.
Okay, so it's the way that you're presenting it.
I don't know. I'm hoping. Okay. I mean, I think, you know, for some, I talk fast and that kind of thing. But the other thing is I try to constantly, whether it's related back to, you know, the farming that I did with my husband, or in the, which is very prominent around here, you know, like how this relates to you. Oh, I'm never going to go to college. It's fine. I'm going to work on the farm. Well, that's fine. But you still need to know where to put your money and, you know, what kind of acreage we're looking at and what are we putting down on these acres and how much is it going to cost and how are you can compare. So trying to find what is it about this that's going to make this relatable to you.
So yeah, you're relating with the students. It's not so much about the subject anymore. So you really push that aside, and what you're doing is saying, well, here's the thing we're talking about, but here's how it applies to you specifically.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, you know, even though I'll always have my phone, well, yeah, you will, but think of how much quicker you could do if you could do this first part just on your own.
Oh my
gosh. To learn not to be dependent on something is great, you know, and when you come to doing that kind of stuff or sharing stories or, you know, then I could go to easy as relating it to tipping when you go to a restaurant or going and there's stuff on sale, you know, yes, you could pull out your calculator, but you could also do it this way. And, you know, I have kids that cling on to that and say, I just showed my mom how to do this, you know, whatever. And I mean, so those are little victories, I think, in math that you have to take, where I think in yours that everything is and you're always trying to get something better. Well, when you're starting at the bottom, every little bit of I taught this to my mom for in math language is huge.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've created something major. Like you went home and talked to your mom about math.
That
goal
is huge.
For the year.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
I mean, I think that's it. I think that we have to have just different expectations than you maybe. Like, can you walk in and smile at me 3 days a week? and maybe give me high five.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And not be late for class at all.
Yeah.
I mean, so we're looking at, you know, the little things.
Yes.
You know, versus
absolutely.
So it's
attitude and all of that stuff. And then also expectation.
Effort is huge. I think effort for me, I mean, effort is everything. If I have a kid that works really hard and they are not good at math, I will move mountains.
Oh. 100%.
Move mountains to help them.
100%.
You know, and I tell kids, you know, if I have a kid that walks in early and says, you know, hey, I forgot my book, or they send me a message on Teams, I forgot my book, I'm so sorry, you know, and there's genuine concern there, then I'm going to work with you.
Oh, yeah.
But when you walk into class and go, I didn't do it, I forgot.
Yep.
I'm sorry, that's a zero.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think that's, you're reciprocating, showing, like, reflecting the level of care you have.
Yes.
It's huge.
Absolutely. No, I had that with a kid yesterday. We were doing school news and they were worried that they did sports incorrectly. And they looked like they would not stop bothering me because they were genuinely concerned. It's like, okay, you're at where I need you to be. It's okay. Relax. We'll figure it out. The fact that they care, then that puts my guard down and knowing we'll get there regardless.
Oh, that's the biggest thing for me. I think if I genuinely have a kid that cares and they just can't do it to the point where, you know, they look like they're just about to break.
Yeah.
I will do anything and everything to get you there.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just the flippant, whatever, that I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Cause then you're done.
I think I have other kids that need me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of that in life. Cause I mean, when you show that you care about whatever it is or whatever person or object or goal or whatever it might be, others reciprocate that. So if you care, others will too, and vice versa.
And I tell people at their job when they have one, cause no matter what, if kids plan to go to college or not, they just want to go to work. That's great. But if you say you're going to do something and then you don't, or your boss asks you to do something and then you don't get to just walk in and go, hey, I didn't do it.
It doesn't work.
Cause he says, you're fired.
Yeah, exactly. So the reason why, like, I was talking about all the reason why I started with, like, how do you get them to grind through? Because there was something that I learned when I went to college these last couple of years that it wasn't even so much because I wasn't going to school to be a math teacher, but I still had to hit certain expectations right. and criteria and all that stuff. I learned at that moment that regardless of whether I was going to memorize and keep all of what I learned in that process, it was much more about I was learning how to do something hard that I didn't want to do. And I was like, oh, that's life. That's all of it. That's all of it right there.
Yeah.
So now whenever I hear kids complaining about math or complaining about science or complaining about this or that and say, like, I'm never going to use it, I say, maybe you won't. At the very worst, maybe you won't keep it. Maybe you won't use it. But what you will keep is the ability to do the thing you don't want to do. And if you can master that, you'll be unstoppable. And that was one of the things I was most excited about with our conversations, right. because I feel like that's the foundation of kind of what the accountability is, what the responsibility is that if you can learn those skills, nobody's going to stop you.
Absolutely. And I tell my kids that. I actually say that. I go, you know, my job in here is to teach you the best that mm-hmm. I can. But ultimately, what somebody who wants to hire you wants to know is, do you have the ability to learn something you don't know? Mm-hmm. Do you have the ability to want to learn something that maybe you don't like? Because unfortunately, in all reality, we don't love every aspect. No one loves every aspect of their job. Or like I say, it would be a hobby. We wouldn't get paid. Right.
Yep.
I mean, that's the way it would work.
Yep.
So, you know, it's can you overcome that? And when they have that victory, whether it's in the classroom with us or on a field or wherever it is, when they do that, there's that confidence that's slowly building a little bit at a time and just everything. And you can see it in the way they walk and the way anything. And that's what I think you're looking for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So after that, we only have two more questions and we'll wrap this up here. So kind of more on a lighter question, but have there been any tough bumps that you've hit while trying to get students to be more responsible? And then how did you deal with them? When what I mean by a tough bump, I mean, like, have you ever run into an issue where you're still just kind of struggling to get them to get on board or to invest, to try, to care? And then, you know, how did you deal with them struggling?
You know, I think just trying to come up with the tools, and for me, having them self-assess and me assess, like, what is it? What is causing you to just give up on me? Or what is it causing you to not take that step?
So you're finding the source way beyond the subject. Well,
and I think that's important, whether it's something as simple as they're transposing mm-hmm. numbers and they don't realize it, or maybe they don't read very well and you didn't realize it. And so you're giving these problems and they don't know what's going on, you know? And I think that when you can find that, and when you ask kids, what I find surprisingly is most times, even the ones that are quiet and that you say you can't get anything from, you can. Because when you reach out and you ask, then they're like, she really does care.
And then
eventually, even if it's not that time that I ask, maybe it's the fourth time that I ask, and they'll just say, well, sometimes when I do this, it doesn't make sense. Okay. And then I can start thinking, you know, then I can go back on what I learned in college and go, okay, what can I do to help this person? Like, is it a website? Is it a card? I've hand done some stuff and make a copy of it and give it to them and say, here's my example. So try this and follow this exactly and see if that works. You know, I've had some kids that say, can you just read the problem aloud to me? Sure.
And that was it.
And that's it. Like, I just need to hear you read it out loud, and I'll stand over them and they'll ask in class in front of people. And I'll read it out loud. And it's amazing when I say, yes, I'm going to read out this number, how many kids stop and listen to me when they didn't ask that question.
Because there's other kids who have that question, but they're either afraid to or just don't want to or don't want to look dumb.
Yeah.
You know, and that I'm sure that's a big thing.
And I say that all
the
time. I'm like, you know, mess up, guys. I was like, it's okay. I give participation points just because I want to hear the thought process. Because then next year I can go, these are the issues that people are having. Let me show you so that they know. And I always try to point out, this is what I see in my other classes. So then they go, oh, good, because that's what I'm having too.
Exactly.
So this is how I'm trying to overcome it. This is assess yourself. Like, are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Show me what you're doing wrong. Mm-hmm. Hoping that will, you know, but ultimately we can only do so much. I mean, I think that we're just constantly learning those kind of tricks.
So really what it comes down to for that answer is, you know, going beyond the subject right away and first working with the human, with the person.
Absolutely.
Starting
kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, and even if they're not kids, even adults, like, we want to feel like we're listened to, right? I mean, that people are noticing that we're limping along, you know, instead of, and I think as teachers, we're pretty observant of that. It's just what we can get from them, you know? And I mean, I feel like if I get enough from other people, eventually maybe I'll hit on something that one person doesn't want to tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's all we can do. I mean, we're trying to hit the majority, and it's going to be very hard to hit everyone. But maybe when they see the care for someone else, then they'll go, okay.
And then they jump into.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. So last question. Mm-hmm. This one's more of a personal one, but So what advice would you give your younger self to help their students be more responsible in math and other subjects? So what would you tell younger Jen to be more responsible or to be more effective in other classes and things like that?
You know, for me, me and my husband talk about this because we were the complete opposite students. You know, I was the hyper-focused, the driven person.
Mm-hmm.
Very, I don't want to say self-involved, but kind of like I had a goal.
Okay, you were very
driven, very, very driven. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to play sports. I had to make straight A's, yeah. You know, my husband was like, I just have to finish high school alive. you know, and I think having the conversations that I have with him now, I wish I would have had those conversations or the maturity level to handle those conversations, understand them the way I do now of him going, hey, people can struggle with school and still be okay. You know, and I think that's hard for me because sometimes I take it personally, like, why are you not trying for me when that's not what's going on? I'm a very small time in that person's existence.
Yeah.
And they're like, it has nothing to do with you.
Absolutely.
And I think I wish I would have been more aware of that or again, had known that younger so that I maybe would have paid attention. Like, what did my teachers do for that person?
Because and you look at that whole situation.
And I never did because it was just like, how was I getting through and how were they relating to me? And if I would have just looked around and went, that person's struggling and I didn't realize, what did they do? And I think just being aware, but I think that comes with maturity and age and circumstance, I mean, all of that. So we can give ourselves all kind of advice, but ultimately, I mean, we didn't have the wherewithal to embrace all that.
That awareness.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We're just trying to make it through puberty ourselves at one time.
Yeah, that's very accurate. Very, very accurate. It's a rough time. It's a lot going on.
It is.
It really, really is. And also too, you know, I've heard this even from my own dad saying, you know, yes, you might be frustrated that they're struggling with this, this, and this, and they're not doing this, this, and this for you. But like you said, understand that this is not their entire life. They have a whole world outside of the little window that you see with them. Mm-hmm. So all you're trying to do is just give them the good that you can, and then you kind of let them be as they
are. And I think we have to remind ourselves of that every day. I mean, do we not? Because we go to take something personally, and we have to go,
because it's such a small facet. Yeah. Absolutely.
But it's just our nature. I think when you're an educator, I think, and a parent, I think it's just your nature to fixate and to internalize and be like, how can I fix it? And not everything is fixable, I don't think.
Yeah, I suppose. Because you're always looking for a hole in the boat. You're always trying to make sure that it's not sinking and going down. So awesome. Well, Jen, thank you so much for coming in and talking. Really, really, really enjoyable.
It was.
And we'll wrap things up and we'll finish up the rest of this podcast from here on out. Thank you for joining us on this insightful journey through accountability and responsibility in education. A big shout out to our amazing guests, Jen Fordahl and Morgan Ehlers, for sharing their wisdom and experiences. Now, as we wrap up this episode, remember, the lessons learned in the classroom extend far beyond academics. Now, you can stay tuned for more enriching conversations on Hawk Talk just by finding us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or YouTube just by searching Hawk Talk HPS. Now, until next time, keep learning, growing, and embracing the power of education. And have a great day.